Okay, well, we're going to listen to Melting Titanium number 30, November 3rd, 2009. This is real early. You hear Ion defining things that people learned and then tossed away. But some of it stays. It's interesting to hear how it was first presented. So, the opening topic, never heard before, what is the moon's effect? What's happening to heaven and earth and the full moon effect and the deer in our backyard?
This is Melting Titanium number 30, recorded on November 3rd, copyright 2009, New Grandview Incorporated, all rights reserved, and we're starting right at 6 o'clock, Hawaii time, 6 p.m. Greetings, Ion.
Good morning.
Well, we had a few skirmishes behind the backstage, and we're all ready to go. It might be a little warrior-like today, maybe not, depending on how Ion bounces off Bob. We have the theme song, Stairway to Heaven, mashed in with Highway to Hell and Last Resort, and Everything's Coming at Roses all happening at the same time.
And the theme song from MASH.
Okay, real MASH, five songs.
Well, you gotta cover your commercial breaks. The sponsors deserve to get paid, Bob.
All right. Now, Ion, maybe you want to make your usual warm introduction.
We just want to welcome everybody on this waning full moon of the harvest tide season. We've had lots of new listeners that are tuning in, and they're embracing this feeling place because this has been an odd full moon. The babies get born when the moon is full. The drunks get drunker when the moon is full. Alcohol is more easily absorbed in the bloodstream. The nerve pills seem to fly, given persnicketly from the pillars of society. And all these are rolling from a heightened sense of expression. That's what happens sometimes with the light of the full moon. The moon is full. Not a new moon, a full moon. And that full moon many times then does send a brighter or a higher state of awareness. There, that's a nice way to say it, a heightened state of awareness. And that awareness then becomes shown as sometimes a higher place of drama. So everyone who's been feeling that place, they cut you off in traffic, they're not nice at the bank line, the milk sours before you get home, these little things that show up in your physicalness are actually happening all the time, but you're just more aware of it. That's why they call them werewolves at the full of the moon, is they're more aware. And that awareness then is heightened, so you just are paying more attention at the full of the moon. And that's the difference. But it is a good place to notice your waxing and your waning from your spans. It's the only place that we have any relevant relegation regarding the time-space continuum of keeping track of how many moons. Because that's one of those things that actually works out even numbers. And it actually works out to be a way to gauge history from the place of how many moons something's transpired from another transpired event, action. So that's just a 50 cents worth to get you started, and you're going to have lots of questions, and we'll take them all, and we'll try to do them tonight. Let's make it Bob's choice tonight. Do you want to do the most people asking the same question or the most outside asking question to come to the front, Bob?
Let's begin with the outsider and then come back. But before we go, I'd like to go into this a little more. If we created the moon, how does it affect us like this?
It's brought into as it's a satellite. You shoot satellites up into space all the time.
Yeah.
But the moon is actually a satellite on the Earth. And its collective gravitational pull is much lighter or less dense than that of what you call your Earth. So, as it is held in stasis, but it's not, as it's held in stasis, but it can't, as it's held in stasis, it's slowly coming closer to the Earth. Because your gravitational field from your electromagnetic pulses are weakening. That's why not many moons ago you had to realign your grid, the electromagnetic grid that goes across the planet. They have to do that so the EMPs can work, you see, because that's that technology they're so vastly proud of. However, you come into a very interesting, fun place there because they're having to realign. It's coming closer to the Earth by the tune of approximately 6.5 to 8 inches a year closer.
It'll eventually get real close?
Apparently, until the grid realigns in a different way and it repels the same way it's being attracted. Here's what's happening. Heaven's getting closer to Earth.
You don't mean by that the moon. You mean heaven.
We do mean heaven, and the moon doesn't know the difference. So it's coming in a little closer, too. And then the thinning of this veil through this transparency that is becoming illumined, that you cannot have the differential between you call heaven and earth. Now, we're using these words just because if you had the real words, you'd probably hang up the phone. So we'll just take it with words you can digest. Words are words are words are words are words, and they keep changing. So then the proof of that is how you Google things.
Could you give us an example of a sentence or two in words that would cause us to hang up the phone?
Good gracious, my gracious, no. Why would we want to do that?
Well, I don't know what words would cause a problem.
Well, it's not about that. It's about your understanding and getting into a place where you can embrace it. You see, you can only go so far from the labyrinth of the mind where it's so disconnected that you just won't have it. And we're not interested in engaging you to a place where you disconnect from non-physical. We're trying all day, every day, to bring you to a place where you can, like your Ignatius Awards, to make you laugh and make you think and come into a new place where you can have your physical and embrace your non-physical through the labyrinth of your mind. And that's our job. That's our only work, and we do it all day, every day. If you can have your words of your place of knowing, and you can find a place that you can question your own capacity of creation, what a fabulous, beautiful, wonderful day. Everything that comes to this place of leading edge, and that's what you like to call this because that's what it is, basically taking an ESP show that folks are freely and easily, even without FCC permission, to communicate and participate at an extrasensory perception level.
Yes.
So you may have to get licensed, Bob, so you can activate this ESP business. So if you want to be compliant, you don't want to be outside of the rules, the regulations that are, that gauge and gouge and put everybody in their perspective places of reality. Carolyn says we're digging a deep hole here, so we'll come back to...
I like that, gauge and gouge. But just, you meant not the Ignatius, the Ignoble prizes. The Ignoble.
No, we meant Ignatius.
Okay, Ignatius Loyola? That's good. Ignatius is Loyola? Like, who's Ignatius? Just a silly name. It's good, good. Okay.
But just remember, the pear does fall far away from the apple tree.
So I get from when you were saying, if you had said some words that did not relate to our labyrinth of mind with our normal perspective, it might have been something, well, the moon is actually a big piece of cheese and you actually eat it. If you had said something like that, which probably is more closer to the truth, right?
You'd have to talk to the man in the moon regarding that tidbit of information, because scientists, they've just gotten through blowing up the moon, so they haven't got the reports back yet to find out if there is indeed water to make the cheese for the green cheese with the man in the moon. So, but the reports will come back, and your scientists will validate it and vindicate it and velucify, put it in a little pocketbook, and if they can't do that, they can certainly put it in their pipe and smoke it as long as they don't inhale. It'll be perfect.
But it's that kind of statement you could have made, which we'll be ready for as we learn more in years to come. And the statement we're not ready for now could be said, and that statement that you would say in the future would be more accurate.
Yeah.
Is what you're trying to say. But it's way beyond what we're prepared to accept because we've been conditioned by those scientists.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
All right. right. So I don't know if you explain why people get intensified by a full moon. Is it because anything that looks full looks exciting?
It's just because it's a heightened sense of awareness.
Yeah, but why does that happen?
That's just the rotation of how it is.
So you're saying that we don't like time, but you will acknowledge the rhythms of the moon. You give in. You'll compromise at that point. If you're going to use
that, a compromise, that's valid. At least it's consistent. You didn't fit time in it. It fits into you. We're not trying to undo the entire time-space continuum. The metronome, the timing, or in rhythm, a rhythm, that doesn't work for birth control, so we'll be real clear about that. But after that, you come into an easy place of the cycle. The sun comes up and it goes down, but not the same time every day. Wait a minute. How does that change? Why can't you make time line up to it? No, no, no. They'll tell you what time the sun comes up and goes down. Not that the sun comes up at this space. No, they'll let you know what time it is that it is. Well, the moon, transversely, is not gauged that way. The moon runs in cycles. It's a cycle, a cyclical flow. Nothing wrong with cycles. Motorcycles, bicycles, tricycles, none of it, nothing wrong with those, because the wheels on the bus go round and round.
And that's rhythm.
No, yes, no problem. But if the gauge of the bus or the wheels that go round and round are based upon time, you're screwed. Because then they'll have to tell you what time the wheels on the bus go round and round and how fast they go around or how many times they go around in your spans of time. That's the issue. And how much interest the bank is charging to make the wheels on the bus go round and round because they bought it on a time deposit. We're not pushing against that, we're anything, but what happens is that the awareness that you have is always constant, except when the fullness of the moon comes, you have a heightened sense of awareness. So the crazy things that take place when the moon is full are the same things that are taking place all the time. Mm-hmm. You just have a closer way, a closer experience of noticing those anomalies.
In chemistry and physics terms, how is the moon affecting our consciousness?
The light of the moon, yeah. The extra light of the moon.
When it's full.
Pale moonlight, when it's full. And when you're in the place where you are experiencing that extra light of that waxing and waning position, what happens then is that extra light provides an extra degree, however small and however faint, of UV bounced light.
Hmm.
And that light has a causal effect on the chemical connections of the synaptic nerve endings within your body.
And in the cones and rods?
Yes.
Science would accept that idea.
And if they don't, then they still tell us why more babies are born by the full of the moon than by the new of the moon. Tell us why the local magistrate's full of misdemeanoring seems to go on. Well, it goes on all the time, Bob. It's just that they notice more when the moon's full. They put on extra police staff when the moon is full. They look how it's scheduled. When the full moon's coming, the nurses aren't off.
So the scientists, what would they say if they would not accept that answer? What would they would say? Okay, we have to explain why this happens. Our statistics show it happens. Actually,
we can't, so therefore it is.
Their statistics might find that it doesn't change anything, that the same number of incidents happen the rest of the day.
Well, we would say that absolutely, yes, and if that's the case, great, but that's not your reality. Your reality then comes into a place that's when the werewolves turn into the beastmasters. That's when they change. That's why they howl at the moon. That's why the beast of your planet become more active, more sometimes what you call aggressive. You notice a heightened sense of aggression.
Well, what's interesting, I did experience the deer walking home from the beach. It was dark, and they were around the golf course running around. They're usually not there, but they were out the last few nights.
And they're there all the time. You just have a more heightened sense of awareness that they could come up and eat corn out of your hand if you'd give it to them.
they may be around, but they're quiet. Every time,
exactly.
This time they bark. They barked and ran when I came along, and they drew attention to themselves. So they were hikers. They were noticing me more, just as much as I was noticing them.
That's exactly correct.
Okay, so do we have an outside question about this topic or another topic that we can take?
Well, it's not necessarily about the moon, but it does fit into the moon. How does the waves, the tides in the waves with a full moon, how are they heightened from the full moon?
And where's that question coming from?
Madeline in Spokane, Washington.
Now, she's asking, are the tides, water tides, they're higher during a full moon?
Yes, they say it has effect of the draw.
So she's asking why that happens?
Yes, at the full moon. What actually happens is, it's the way the, it doesn't exactly, but it does. Okay, does that make sense? It lines up. What happens is when the tides come in and they're high, it's a cycle as well, and it just so happens to coincide with the cycle of the moon.
That cycle remains constant, so it's always coinciding.
Correct. So therefore, it becomes what you call the causal reality.
Yeah, they think the moon's causing it, but it isn't.
Kind of. It has an effect, you see, because which is it? Is it that chicken or that egg? Mm-hmm. You know, where's the problem? And you can sit that down and figure that out, actually. But then when you take it to the next level of why did the chicken cross the road, that's a whole other paradigm that you've got to work with here, you see.
If the tides always happen at the time of the full moon, it may have lined up originally if there was a beginning point, but that's not definite. It may have always lined up with it.
Yes.
Because
yes.
They were connected.
Yes, the extra gravitational revolution, that becomes a point of attraction. So what's happening, only thing that's happening is the tide coming in is at a higher layered level of compaction. So that's all that's really happening, but it shows up. The high tides in a full moon are higher than the high tides of a new moon. It happens globally.
And it's a coincidence.
Okay.
Not really, but it is, and it's hard to tell because we haven't got a beginning point to see who started it first.
And we can embrace that, but it is an anomaly that coincides with the fullness of the moon, and the causality of the effects, not effects precedes the cause, the causality actually is an example of how tactility can align with an experience that you can look forward to, so therefore you must be psychically inclined.
And tactility is interplay and contrast. That's
correct.
The meaning of it. Okay, well, that was really good. Do we have another question?
Paul from we don't know where Montecito is.
Okay.
But Montecito, maybe it's like a town or a community. His question has to do with polarity. Polarity, how you are in proportion to the polar field.
We have a relationship with it.
You do. The question is, how does it affect? Well, how it affects is it's the place, it would be what you call your beginning place that would put you to see how the distance between you and you. Now, that's how we would explain it, but that's not the question. The question is how does it affect the whole global transparency of your electromagnetic field? Which you've known about, then see, they're acting like that's a brand new thing. But that's been around since the beginning, Bob, if there is a beginning. But they're acting like this is this brand new thing. It's kind of like this microwave radiation that someone invented it. No, it's been around for a very long time. You just figured out now how to use it to warm your coffee and your hot cross buns in your microwave oven and in your cell technology.
Had any culture in the many spans of nows that have happened had the microwave oven the way we have it?
Well, of course not, Bob.
Okay. So
but they certainly knew how to harness radiation.
How did they do that?
Well, they certainly used that. That's the same radiation that they would use in their tribal rituals,
mm-hmm.
cleanse their altar accoutrements. That's when they would use, because they knew that that process was a synced up reality. They could also concentrate it with their altars in capturing ultraviolet rays, radiation, gamma burst. They knew in the gamma burst that you had basically more power. In some of the Indian cultures, they describe it in the translation. It loses a bit in translation, but we've got to keep it English as much as we can, just so it can have a reverberation, because, you know, you could do it in another language, but that didn't help those that don't understand that language, of course. So we'll lose a little in translation, but it will get it across. The point was and is that they knew how to focus these rays in curing meat, in their tanning hides, leathers, in growing of the ones that were into the farming methodology of raising food rather than just killing what they would eat. They learned that after a time they could use these fields, like a field of corn, a field, that some fields were more receptive to certain crops than others. Same vernacular, you see. But we lose a little in translation. They were meaning that if you could look at the land and you could focus the land, you could come to a place to where you'd know where to plant the potatoes, where to plant the corn, and how to bring that all together to make maize so you could have your flan and tortillas and all these fun, simple, basic carbohydrates.
What is radioactivity? These rays, aren't they dangerous? And how could they focus them?
They're dangerous if you try to dry your cat in a microwave oven. It's very effective, but it doesn't do well for the beast. The concentrations kind of get a little over the top, you see. It works from inside out. But they knew this from ages ago, Bob.
What gadget did they use?
Stones. If you take a stone in a place where that would be captured, the stone would warm from inside out, not from outside in.
Where is this radioactivity? You find them
everywhere. Everywhere.
It's in the ground, in stones, or
in the air.
It's in the air. Does science recognize that?
They do. The microwave oven doesn't come with microwave radiation. It captures the ambient radiation in the air, concentrates it, and moves the molecules in the food faster so it cooks from inside out.
So the Indian cultures figured worked with rocks and some matter.
Well, that's just an example. They didn't call it microwaves.
No.
They didn't call it macrowaves.
They just knew energy was in the air. Invisible.
That
energy.
Is correct. That is correct. And now the next new fun thing, and this leads us to another question that kind of leans up to it. This is from Rose, and she's from Dartmouth.
In Nova Scotia.
Yes.
Wow. How does she happen to hear us?
They were having rain, and she was just sitting, being quiet, fixing to go to bed, and she was just thinking, and the clock, her mantle clock, stopped. She was looking at it, and as she was looking at the mantle clock, it caught her attention, and she started hearing things, and she didn't know what it was, and so then she sort of eased into it and was like, wait a second, I can communicate. And now she's like, wait a minute, they're talking about me. Wait a minute, how does this work? This is kind of fun. And so she sat down with a little cup of tea, and she has this little, her grandmother crocheted this throw that she loves dearly, and she wanted to acknowledge that. And she's sitting there, it's a little bit cool, so she's sitting on her, she calls it a Davenport, covered up with her little throw, enjoying a nice cup of tea, enjoying the show. Well, it's not too foreign to her because they used to watch the radio in those days anyhow, so it's not too foreign to enjoy the audio version of an expression. And she's always been what you call, she calls it psychically tuned. So the question then comes into this thinking, how does fields, we're talking about polarity fields, we're talking about sterile fields, we're talking about all fields, like their areas of being, how does it affect clocks and or the pendulums in clocks? Because she heard someone making reference earlier about the TikTok metronome version and the place of, wait a minute, that is, and it's engaged, receptive, that makes that pendulum swing back and forth. It doesn't undo gravity, but yet it uses as a calibration, so tick-tock time can be tick-tocked. And then she now finds herself in a place to where every other full moon, it seems to have an effect on this particular mantle clock.
And that's an old-fashioned clock face or a digital clock?
Old-timey, yes.
Yeah.
It's a wind-up mantle clock.
So she's asking about polarity in relation to clocks?
The fields that make her clock, her particular clock, misbehave, those are the words, misbehave, every other full moon.
Does it get back on course after it stops?
Yeah, she just has to let it run down and then reset it, and then it's fine.
Oh, so, okay.
The next full moon, nothing noticed, but then every other full moon, what happens is that it seems to get caught up and stop.
Even though it hasn't unwound.
Correct.
She's asking, well, you're going to explain the field effect here?
If we can use words that are making it understandable. But here's how it works. The moon goes around the Earth every day. The sun, in perspective to where the moon is to you, goes around and gives a different point of refraction, that illuminates the moon, sometimes so much so that light then is cast to the Earth. But that every other cycle of the moon that you're getting, because it goes around the Earth every day, but where the Earth is in perspective to where the moon is, according to where you are, has an effect of how that applies. Because you see, the full moons are opposite. You see, because when we have a new moon, someone else is having a full moon. So it's that rotation. But yet the moon goes around the Earth every day. But see, then the Earth is going around the sun. So it's every other rotation that has this particular field activity effect on her particular mantle clock. And the answer or the solution is when she takes the clock in to be cleaned, and it hasn't been cleaned in about 12 years, she needs to take it into the little clock shop. There's one there in Dartmouth, and they will take and clean it, and they have a special oil that would be used. We would call it a grease, but it's actually a clock oil that will allow the clock to move through that process without having this effect of every other moon cycle. She has this issue because she dearly loves the clock, of course.
So something about the rotation between the three objects makes every second moon different?
More intense.
And you didn't really explain how that happened, why that happened every second rotation.
Because of where the perspective of the first full moon, the moon is in a different proximity.
It has a different relationship with the sun, which makes it more intense.
Where the sun hits it, because, see, the Earth is moving as the moon is moving. So every second rotation is we're halfway around. We're halfway around the journey and that process in the perspective that the sunlight hits the moon in your nighttime. So that's how that works. And it's purely, we would say coincidental, but there are none of those. A coincidence just means it's an incident that happens dually.
Yeah, and you don't think there is any obvious reason why they, or any other reason they're happening dually. Coincidence is saying, well, they're just happening, we don't know why they're happening together. We only know they're happening together. That's their reason. But then coincidence, if it wasn't a coincidence, there'd be other factors involved in why they're happening together.
There actually are, but that's all you really want. The same thing, too, is in a cycle with these alpha males that running around. They seem to be more amorously inclined in a full moon.
And that's because they're always amorously inclined. They just notice it more.
Perfect. Very, very good. You've got your cue cards working tonight, Bob.
I can see them with this great full moon light. I can see
them. Yes, indeed. And it also illuminates.
let's just make an interesting shift. There was a poet in the 19th century, Arthur Rimbaud. Excuse me. No, it was Baudelaire.
Baudelaire.
Baudelaire wrote Illuminations, I think.
Yeah.
Just get a little literary here. What was he thinking and meaning by his phrase, Illuminations?
The absence of darkness in all perspectives.
In other words, the not noticing contrast.
And the numbing effect that...
that the illumination makes.
Yes, the non-illuminated puts you in a quandary of darkness. Anything that's illuminated is exposed. And the exposure thereof was the reference point that was still very popular in some of those worlds that... it's been redone several times, and it's been enlightening.
It came out in 1857, and I always thought when McLuhan did his special issue Explorations in 1957, he consciously did it on the 100th anniversary because he thought a lot of Baudelaire's work. And yes, in certain poetical fields, he's a classic.
So why don't you quote Baudelaire instead of McLuhan all day, every day?
It's in French, and I haven't read it in a long time, and not up on...
Enchanté, it's not so bad.
No, it's in English, but... what you're saying that he was illuminating, but he was pointing out there was darkness that was missed.
Correct. And some things were in that darkness that illumination exposed, but that could enlighten, so that you could also be illumined in a... dark field.
The person who makes my YouTubes buzz, he summarized Ion's philosophy as similar to the Taoist philosophy, T-A-O-I-S-T. I know the Tao, they're very good at the complementariness of life. There's a few good quotes like, the spokes of the wheel are made one by the void of the hub, I think. You know, something like that. You know, the emptiness of...
Is that Connie cackling in there?
It's over, Candy, Connie's head.
Bob the poet.
So that complementariness, maybe the yin-yang, I don't know if the yin-yang symbol comes out of Taoism.
It does, it does. They're the original ones that conceived the notion that the wheels on the bus go round and round.
You mean they noticed that?
Ezekiel had a little exposure with that as well.
Who's the one who saw the layers of heaven?
Enoch.
And I know Ion would say more than the Taoists. You add something to everything because it's the first opportunity to actually get clarity from the guff. What is it about Taoism that you would say the buzz... since he's aligning you with the concepts of Taoism, what would you say he's missing if he thinks Ion's agenda, philosophy, purpose, meaning, symbolism?
Well, that's a good purpose. I mean, that's a good purpose. It's a little bit off. We'll give a parallel. You do understand that the United States of America was founded so you could have religious freedom. But they weren't Christians.
The founders were Freemasons.
And they were deists. They acknowledged that there's a superior being, but you don't worship it.
Why wouldn't you worship it?
Because it didn't require praise. It was more an individual representation or aspect of deity.
No, it was more that the deity was in the individual?
Yes.
Ah, okay. So it's not that the deity was so removed from this world it wouldn't hear your ritual worship. Not that.
It was that you were in control of the deity. And the Taoist come into a different aspect of that same appreciation. The Taoist come that you are culpably endowed, that's the word, with power from on high, but it only applies to your here and now. And we would say, yes, but you certainly do have help from non-physical. They just have the rules and regulations by which the system is judged. And there's nothing nothing wrong with that. You know, y'all like these rules, so
yeah.
I get a bunch of them. You know, they started off with 10 commandments, and then the Torah turns into be 618 rules and regulations, and then they make rules about the rules, and then they make regulations about the regulation of the rules, and then how the rules apply and when they apply, and then from there you can't eat pig or fish on Fridays. So you know it just kind of rolls along until it eliminates quite a bit after a while.
Yeah, it's quite a rabbit hole. It's quite a rabbit hole,
but it's okay if you like rabbits. That's where they live, is in a hole.
I was thinking that the same with the Taoists laid out their rules, but you would add to that with the Freemasons.
Well, that and then the capacity of non-physical and the relation with you and you. They don't acknowledge the non-physical capacity that can have a causal effect on the deity.
Both of them, Freemasons and Taoists?
Freemasons don't have anything to do with it. That's not a religion.
Okay, Taoists don't acknowledge that. So they're objectifying the way the universe works, but dealing with the visible universe and its pattern of complementarity. They're missing the non-physical.
They don't miss it. They just don't acknowledge it.
And that's the difference.
And that is really what their place is. It's not wrong, incomplete, or less than. It's just not the rest of the story, as Paul Harvey would say.
Whereas the Freemasons do not enter into the religious ideas.
Well...
No, they do, but they don't make a religion out of it. They don't make a bureaucracy.
But they did the same thing in the charismatic church with non-denominational... They had non-denominational religions because they didn't want to be denominated. Everybody was free for all. Everyone who wanted to come could. They didn't have to be Baptist or Methodist or Catholic or Lutheran or whatever they had to be. Well, you could be whatever you wanted to be and go to the non-denominational church. Well, guess what? There got to be so many of those, it became a denomination. So now non-denominational is a denomination.
But you're citing that as an example of the same fate that happened to the Freemasons.
Correct. You get to such a place that you can have a town hall meeting and turn it into a cult.
That usually happens.
It typically does. So we can't just say every single time without fail or exception, and we like that phrase. You know well, we like examples that you can say, and this happens every single time without fail or exception. Because then that becomes universally apropos.
And you're saying that does apply here? Or not?
This one does not. It doesn't work every single time without fail or exception. So we're not going to spend much time on it. It is a reality, but not every single time without fail or exception.
It seems there's another question from whoever, the mainstream or the fringe.
Okay, mainstream. This is larger. It's coming up several different ways. So the main flow, it has to do with why the birds sing. It has to do with their proximity to source. It has to do how source applies. If different birds still sing to the heavens, do all the birds sing to the same heavens? You see how we're getting several different layers of questions?
Yeah.
But they all seem to be focused around the birds. Not Hitchcock's version, but the birds. All right, so it's coming back to that same thing, and here we go. We'll just answer it and try to hit as many of these top five questions that are very similar but yet different. All birds, fowl, when they sing to the heavens. Why do they sing? They sing for the rejoicing and the delicious experience that is their reality.
They don't have emotions.
They don't have emotions, but yet they sing and sing and sing and sing. Sometimes they sing to mate. Sometimes they sing to warn of an impending problem that's in their environment. They'll chirp to let you know. And some of them, the funniest one, and this is another question, is, and here's the best question that kind of compounds many of these together. How is it that a tiny, tiny, tiny little sparrow, a 2-inch sparrow, a little bit bigger than a finch, but we're talking about a little bitty bird, can be nesting on their young, and then a great big crow or a great big bird, a huge bird, can come along in that area, and that little bitty sparrow will literally run that crow off.
Is that right?
They absolutely will, and I mean with a vengeance. The same way a human can corner a spider, and once the spider's cornered, he'll come at you with all his might. And you'll back up pretty fast because he means business. Because once they're cornered, once their back's to the wall, they're going to proceed. Same thing with the little birds. Like, me or you, one's going to get a whipping, and it's more than likely going to be you. And that big crow knows he's in somebody else's territory, and they'll move, and they'll squawk when that's going on. When that type of intersection occurs, that's a type of singing as well, but maybe not so pleasant. But if you're in the area where that's taking place, you'll know.
Yeah, but what? Why is the crow or the big bird intimidated by the little bird?
It's because of their territory.
Well, it's like the crow respects territory.
Well, it doesn't have a choice because the little sparrow's going to whoop its butt.
How is it going to do that?
It just does. It flocks and squawks and pecks and flies at to the point that the crow finally says, you know what, I'm just going to move on. Easy with this.
So size
the crow's got no fight with the little sparrow, but the little sparrow says, you're not going to do this in my house. But that wasn't about that. That was about the singing process, you
right.
see. So that gives the whole dynamic of why the birds sing to the heavens.
Okay.
And yes, they do, every time, without fail or exception.
Is it like, I don't know, masturbation? They just enjoy the pleasure of it.
Well, Connie would say you put a bad slant on the whole thing.
No, she wouldn't. No, she wouldn't.
Well, but the point is, it's not a release. What it is, it's an expression of the joyfulness of their creation that they're enjoying.
Their being.
Their beingness. They get birds sing. That's correct. That's what they do.
Now, every animal expresses the joy of being.
If that's the case, that all the beasts of your planet that ever have been would still be.
If they enjoyed being like the birds, they would still be.
That's correct. Cockroaches enjoy being. They've lasted since the Mesozoic era.
So you're saying that there's many species that died off because they didn't enjoy their being.
Three-toed sloth, two steps from the grave. There isn't been a handful on the planet.
Why wouldn't they? How could they know the difference?
They come to a place where their beingness, the deliciousness that is his life, has left their expressionable reality. So therefore, it's easier to not be here than to be here. Shakespeare took that on with to be or not to be. Well, more of them are choosing not to be, so much so that they can actually go absolutely what you call extinct.
That seems to have a bit of consciousness required.
Oh, wait. No. You're saying then that if that's the case, then fish have to have a consciousness to swim. No, that's just what fish do. They swim. They don't have to be conscious to do that. They can sleep and swim.
The choice factor done by the three-toed sloth to give up its being implies some kind of decisioning or evaluating where they are.
They are after the fun. They just don't have a mind process to calculate how well off or bad off they are. Let's say it this way. They respond to conditioning. Whereas humans also respond to conditioning, but they worry about it. Birds don't worry about if they're troubling you with their singing. They just sing. Fish don't worry that they're troubling you because they're swimming in your water. Wait, it's their water. Well, no, wait, they don't care. But if you're in the water, then they're coming along and you may have a question. Well, little fish, this is my water. I don't want you swimming where I am. And then I'm worried. And then am I upsetting the eco balance and tearing up the coral reefs? And I'm going to have a war on coral and going to have a war on cancer and a war on this and that. And we're only going to hire and elect politicians that support the war on coral. See, the beast of your planet, they don't get that far. They don't get into that. The dog doesn't care how many mean you are to them or how bad you are to them, if you'll pet them on the head every once in a while and throw them a bone, they'll still hang around. It's not personal. Humans make it personal. If dogs are walking through your yard and they have to go, their bowels have to move, they just hope you'll understand. Well, no, they really don't care whether or not you understand. But if you're walking and you're having this problem and you run into that, all of a sudden, what is it about me that's making this beast use my yard as their septic tank?
The humans ponder this difference, and they wonder if they have arrived at a more interesting place than animals.
Well, yeah, they have. They know, because they even worry about that they're worrying about it. People worry that they're not worrying enough, or
yes.
They worry that they're worrying too much. How much sense does that make?
I used to say that consciousness is worry. All consciousness is worrying.
It certainly doesn't have to be. That'd be like saying all living is a bother.
In 25 words or less, give us the answer to where worrying would not dominate.
42.
No, I said 25 words. That's a number.
Oh, sorry. We'll spell it out to you. 40 is a word. 2 is a word. Oh, 42.
Let's go for a little more words. The technique. What is the
question? When you limit this to 25 words, how are you going to bark up that tree?
No problem.
That's
I think
like
you
I
would just say relax and allow. That's the answer. Relax and allow.
Okay.
Right? That's the answer. Relax and allow and follow the best path to joy. 25 words.
So we promise you an orgasm in 10 seconds or less.
Well, how would you do that?
Well, that's what you're asking for.
You're saying, if you relax and allow, you will get an orgasm in 10 seconds.
No. If you limit it to 25 words or less, then we're going to say, okay, if you can provide us with an orgasm in 10 seconds or less. The fun is on the journey. It's not the arriving.
If you relax and allow that you're human and worrying, things would be a lot easier because you'd enjoy the worrying. Enjoy the worrying, which would then diminish the worrying.
Yeah, just the worry, 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 worry. What's worry? It's giving your undivided attention to something that you can't affect or have a change over anyhow. And so then you're spending your time concerned with what's going to go wrong, that hasn't gone wrong, that might go wrong, because you're giving it your attention for it to go wrong. So stop it. Don't do that anymore.
Yeah, well, what makes
or worry?
What made that worry?
Questioning your own significance as a
what made that first question arise in the human consciousness? Is there a chemical reason? A vibrational reason?
It's questioning your power.
Why would a human get to that point of doing that?
Because your mother said, don't do that, that'll kill you, and don't taste that.
A later phase. I'm talking about how...
Which later? The mothers, they would bring them from source, and then the mothers would immediately put them in a papoose and carry them around so the wolves wouldn't eat them. So how far back do you want to go? The cavemen, they would nurse their babies, and then they would pack them away and hide them so that the serpents, the beastmaster snakes, didn't eat them.
Okay, but here's the thing. What made them think that that was an issue?
Disconnection, the immediate disconnection.
So humans are a disconnection.
They are. That's why they had to have a veil to separate it. Because the non-physical was so powerful, if you bumped it into the physical, they wouldn't accept that there was also a non-physical within them. That light, the microwave oven of the Ark of the Covenant of the New Jerusalem. It was such a powerful oven, if you opened up the door, it would melt your brains out. So you had to put it in a veil, and then you had to have the Levites, the priests to have it. And they had to be right with God, with Yahweh, so much so that they'd tie a rope around their waist so if they went in for the Holy of Holies to make their atonement for Yom Kippur and for the siege and the High Holy Days, when they would go make the atonement at the mercy seat, if they weren't right, they'd fall over dead, and they couldn't go get them, so they'd tie a rope around them so they could drag them out feet first.
That's a product of worry. I'm asking, how did humans first disconnect? In other words, humans are the pinnacle of connection, the pinnacle of creation, because they finally arrived at a point where they could disconnect. They could choose to disconnect.
That is, they could choose to question and or gauge how they were doing within the proximity of their beingness.
what was the chemistry in the brain or body that triggered the first awareness of disconnection?
Psychosis.
So what was the chemistry in the brain?
It's not a chemical imbalance. It's chemically inclined through psychosis. What you're asking for is how much tryptophan does it take to put you to sleep? Well, that varies. The chemical reaction that you're speaking of is different degrees. But then some people would think cold. You say, okay, how cold is the water? Oh, it feels fine to me. And they get in and they go, you've lost your mind. This water's freezing. 50 degrees. No, no, this water's just right. So your chemical place, what's your chemical place to be wrong to say the water's fine when it's 50 degrees? Well, it's all relative. You're asking for the actual compounding, and what we're here to tell you is the compounding is not a abdicatable science, and that's the problem with science. Their litmus is the same, but the gauges that they're running the cycles through are all different. They're drawing straws, but they didn't make a short one.
They have no beginning point, and they believe they have a beginning point, but they began, they said, okay, this chemistry in the brain is accurate in determining how cold the water is, and all you other people in the tribe, you got to have this chemistry follow the standard, right? That was the first error.
Yes, and then Walter Cronkite says, water is now this degree, so hot water is this, and that's the news as we know it.
This subtle point where that happened, there is probably not a first time.
Well, there's nothing subtle about it. It's pretty awkward, don't you think?
There is no first time in human creation where you could say, oh, there, we became a human at that point.
We didn't say that. We said there's no time. And so if you're going to eliminate a first time, then why don't you just do away with time altogether, and then that saves the depth and brevity of your rabbit hole-ness.
Oh,
wait, rabbit hole-ness, Carolyn, is that a word? Rabbit hole-ness. Whether the cleave accent or not, wait a minute.
The disconnect, or now you make me lose it. What the heck were we talking about? Yeah. I'm worrying. Is worrying.
You're worried.
Interacts with
that's about worry.
Is worrying caused by a concept of time?
Yes.
In other words, you have a baby, a mother has a baby, and thinks, I want to have the baby remain being here for a long time. I must protect it. But if they didn't care whether the baby survived or not, because they didn't consider there any time.
Well, they certainly can't control it by telling them that all those things will kill them. It doesn't make them stay or go. Because if you get it just right, they're going to be like, you know what, Mom, I'm just going to go ahead and get out of here because I can't survive this way. And the food is bad, and the cancer's bad, and the terrorism is bad, and the drug dealers are bad, and the world is bad, and the fires are bad, and the floods are bad, and the electricity is bad. And I know you've got asbestos in my crib, and I can't do this. Mesothelioma is not the way I choose to go. So maybe I'll just get out of this right here, right now.
And find a snake to bite me.
No. We'll just go ahead and proceed with the abortion that you considered in the beginning. Oh, wait, Roe and Wade. Oh, yeah, that's another conversation.
Okay, so just in case we've gone off in our own rabbit hole, let's see if there's a question from the fringe. The individual rather than the mass mind?
This has to do with polity. And we don't think we know what they mean, but they're talking about the polity of the church.
That's politics and dogma and things like that.
Well, the reference is the polity regarding the church. Connie, do you mind if you mind looking up that polity?
Who's the question coming from? I am.
John.
Okay.
Polity, from the Greek, is a form of government Aristotle developed in his search for a government that could be most easily incorporated and used by the largest amount of people, groups, or states.
That cleans it up. Because, see, when you go at it from that regime, he's from Boston, Bob. When he comes at it from that regime, that's the kicker for the most, because we didn't understand how the polity would play in this dynamic that was trying to get asked. from this place of asking. If it's okay that we can use this definition, then it's the simplest rule, or an Occam's razor, then comes into the polity issue of which rule or form of rule serves the largest rather than the fewest. The monarchy rather than
Democracy.
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh.
Like have a king or have a mob rule, you know? Uh-huh. Which is better, right? That's the question.
Well, that was the dynamic. We still don't know if that was exactly the point, okay, like the polity of the church. We're not sure exactly which way it was poking, so that's why we wanted to clean it up with your words as far as the definition, just to clean it up. So if it was a false premise, you saw where we based the false premise from, okay? So if that may clean itself up, meaning they may re-ask the question a different way, but we were answering based on that dynamic that was available at the time.
The polity for the church.
Yes.
The government.
Mm-hmm.
Which is better, the Pope?
Hierarchy.
The Pope or the non-denominational, everyone come on in.
Correct. Free for all.
Mm. Versus the Pope. Yeah, free for all versus the Pope.
But you know, the cheekiness of that is they're saying that it is free for everyone, but then you turn around into a barroom brawl is a free for all. Anything goes. So that's why we were being a bit cheeky. Sorry if we offended any of those members of Free for All Baptist Church.
So though that's the paradox of democracy. It's a free for all.
It's paradoxical, for sure.
So answer the guy's question about it. Which is the advisable policy for the church?
Serve and follow the master that you empower. And we would say that master is you. If you can't go with that, then serve the one you follow.
Yeah, you set up a following. You follow something, then serve it.
If not, then leave it alone.
Yeah, don't be involved in a following.
Correct. But now we're answering the question from his asking. Now, they didn't ask, non-physical, what should I do? They didn't ask that question. So we can't say, forget all that foolishness and know that you are God and that you create everything and every part of your reality. Now, boy, we're bootlegging the kingdom here, are we not? We're actually giving the answer that they didn't ask in a roundabout way to say, come into your own power and knowing, and then you won't be asking these weird questions of authority over your beingness.
If one adopts the policy today of not following any group mandates like democracy, fascism, communism, socialism.
And they'll turn that into a law.
I'm saying that if you're the center of your universe.
You are.
Then that could make people a little more polite and decent because you're interacting with another universe and you don't know how it's going to explode or expand or what.
Why don't you?
Well, you could say I'm bringing in a fear element.
No, we didn't say that. We just asked the question, if not, why not?
If not what?
Okay. What were you talking about?
Yeah, I'm trying to get to it. The idea that if everybody operated on the principle that they were the center of their own universe, it might sound selfish and narcissistic and there's conventional objections to that.
That's what you're left with at the end of the day anyway.
That's right. So I was thinking, it would actually, if we accepted that principle, then it would create more social peace because you would be a little more respectful of the others because you would not know what the heck that universe is going to express in itself.
Indeed, indeed. And also what it would do, it would liberate you that you weren't being judged by someone else in the middle of their universe that has an effect on your universe.
So you would, when you interacted with others, reach out and allow their reality and be more sensitive to it because it could manifest itself quite uniquely to you.
Well, yes, and they used to say, now we're not being sexist here because we don't have a sexist bone in our body, but we're just giving your words. It used to be your domicile that the man was the king of his castle, meaning that he wanted to. And, of course, if you did that just right, then you also are living with the queen, not the kind that does the dances that are male. We're talking about the queen of the household, meaning that oneness of the deity or the monarchy of the HRH status of the king and the queen. They would be equal, but we're just using the man being the king of his domicile, of his household. Well, that's really not the case or true anymore. Meaning, they've even pushed against that dynamic to the point where they can invade your privacy and tell what you're doing and how you're doing it and when you're doing it and if that falls under the category of terrorism or not.
So you can't be king of your castle anymore.
Correct.
So if you want to be a king, you have to find another way to express it.
That's correct. That's what you're kind of asking about in this worry state of application to the point where you don't really have to worry about anything because that's all been taken away from you already anyway. So, great, now we don't have to worry about that anymore. We don't have it.
And then realizing there's more than what appears.
Well, of course, look at your, quote, inalienable rights that you forfeit all day, every day. So you shouldn't worry about it because you gave it away, so don't worry, enjoy.
So the solution Ion proposes is realize there's more worlds, more areas that you can explore, and don't have to worry about being limited to your chemical body zone.
Well, you're such a marvelous creator that you can abdicate your throne and make your government culpably responsible for every abject possibility of your pursuit of happiness. And then you're mad because you're tired of the government telling you what to do.
Ion is suggesting to imagine and to then bring into being other worlds that you can explore, and you're not limited by the woes of this world.
If you are, then if you do go to another world, you're going to drag them with you. Call someplace paradise and then kiss it goodbye.
So that with that catch-22 dialectic, how would you express the enlightened state in relation to that?
Then you come into a place where you find the joyful place of atonement with yourself. You can atone with yourself. Many of the psychiatrists say you can't love another till you learn how to love yourself. You got no gauge. You don't know how you're doing between you and you. If you don't know where you are, how are you going to help somebody else find their way?
You're saying you could find your relationship between you and you.
Well, shorten that distance as fast to learn how to love yourself, and then you become in the process of what they call a lover who loves.
How is that different from what the psychiatrists say? The psychiatrist says get together with yourself before you engage another. You're saying the same thing. Figure out your relationship between you and you.
If the psychiatrist was trying to empower you as a human being, great. That's not what they're doing. What they're doing is pointing out how you are where you are and how that variegates from what reality's supposed to be. There's your problem, Houston. They're trying to get you to the middle of the road, and you're trying to figure out which way you're going on the road.
And they want to get you to the middle of the road.
They don't care which way you go as long as you're in the middle of the road. Not too high, not too low, not too happy, not too sad, not too blissful, not too depressed, not suicidal, but not too high on life.
That middle position, when you arrive there, then you're ready to relate to another.
The lukewarmness makes you come to a place where you don't want to swallow it. You just want to spit it out of your mouth. And that's that contrast of middle-of-the-roadness. Uh-oh, there's another one of those crazy words.
You're saying the disservice of acquiring the middle road is that you'll end up wanting to spit it out.
It becomes bland. It becomes flavorless, tasteless. They start selling chicken now. It's so much fun. JW's wife buys it every once in a while, but very rare. She calls it skinless, boneless, tasteless chicken.
Yeah, I heard about it. I don't inflict it on myself.
I understand.
That was all in response to the polity, which was a very good answer about polity.
Well, we're sorry it took us so long to get a hold of it, but we couldn't understand the dynamic that was the asking, you see, because it had different dynamics, so we wanted to use your words. So if we did miss your point, that you see how we got where we were. And so please redefine that, clarify. Tune into the Cash Flow Show in real time. drama in real time. And, of course, then you can embrace that further. And, Bob, what you're going to start noticing is that folks that are participating and look forward to this show, they are very appreciative, very thankful, because it allows an outlet that before they would have put them in the same asylum. 40 years ago, if you had this experience, they would put you away.
Why?
It's open. It's easy. It's appropriate.
What caused that change?
Coming into your power.
How come humans came into their power? Because they had so much taken away from them.
Oh, no. It's because the quantum physicist of the day say that you double technology every 18 minutes, or was that months, or was that days, or was that years? Oh, well, there goes that continuum problem again. But it doubles. So exponentially, the numbers get so big that there's room for all kinds of ones and zeros in your reality. If it's doubling, and you see you start doubling, that doesn't mean that you have one and then you get two and then that turns into you add another one. No. We're talking about doubling. So it becomes the square. So it becomes one and then two and then four and then eight and then 16. It's sort of like your cell biology.
Yeah, like cancer.
Oh, yes, and the war on terror and
okay, so you're saying that quantum physicists are absurd to point out that people came to this point now, or they're a little more tolerant.
Oh, you asked how are they now able to figure that out. We're telling you that's because they said it doubles every 18 minutes, sir.
Well, we're talking about consciousness. They're talking about technological environments.
What's the difference? That's how you gauge. You're drowning in the water, but you're thirsty. You're dehydration, drowning in the pool.
Well, now you're quoting McLuhan.
You're trying not to, so it's forcing us to pull us into McLuhanism. Okay. Well, so we'll go, however, James Joyce, on the leading edge of confusion and idolatry, the leading edge of incompleteness, spent all day every day trying to point out the absurdity that the laudable conclusions that you confine in your place of substantiation, of your place of being on this planet Earth, is as silly as sitting up with the dead.
Why is sitting up with the dead silly?
They're already dead, Bob.
He thought that was absurd.
Well, think about it. You think you could spend time with the living rather than waiting to sit up with the dead?
So many cultures respected the dead. That's because they knew there was a non-physical.
Well, they did, because so many times they got to burying them too quick, and they would come back to life, and then there would be a problem. Do you understand that they used to? They had this, we call it narcolepsy, but it was a little bit more endearing than that, where they would literally put a bell in the graveyard, and if you woke up in your coffin, they'd have a string that you could pull and ring the bell, and they'd come dig you up.
Because it happened so often.
Check your hysterically history.
And that would be because souls decide to come back in the transition.
Correct.
So the quantum physics doubling Moore's law made people very wonderfully tolerant today in exploring individual universes.
Well, they've numbed everything out. It used to be anything could be just waiting, very exciting. My stars, a great big pumpkin at the state fair would just make your day. Now you can see somebody's guts and every dynamic that you, way more than even a doctor will have to ask Dr. Carolyn Dean, Canada's finest. We'll have to ask her in her anatomy classes if the innards were anatomically correct, and she could go through those dynamics, and it wouldn't appall her because she's looked at all the bodies. You see, she knows what they look like. Well, then what happens is the way that it's been exposed now, there's not a dynamic that doesn't get. I mean, when they have the movies now, Saw 5 or 6, it cuts out all 212 bones in the body and lays them out for you.
I was telling Carolyn that
you know, I'm watching TV again more than I ever did for 30, 40 years. And Fringe and Flash Forward, there's always a rushing in the hospital and ripping someone's gut out and they're in the surgery emergency room. That's always going on. They're showing a lot of the body that way.
So therefore, it numbs that whole experience. So far now, everybody in the world has a hemostat, so if they nick an artery, they can clamp it off until they can get to the ER so they don't bleed out. That contrast is kind of way fun, but what is it that a human creator would have to be thinking about in order to actually own or procure a hemostat to have in your own home? If you weren't trained how to handle it, what would you know to do with it anyway? You do know what a hemostat is, right, Bob?
No. Carolyn,
tell him what a hemostat is.
Something that you clamp blood vessels with. It's like a little tweezer.
It's tweezers.
Do people have those in their homes?
No.
They do. It's tweezers that lock.
McLuhan said we're at the highest decibel of human consciousness. However, I would say, and he meant this too, but I'll just say, however, we have arrived at this incredible period of consciousness in our society by default. Because we numbed ourselves into it.
It's down so much so that nothing catches your eye. Back in the day, if you saw a woman's ankles, boy, that just sent you right into Erection City. Seeing flesh, law, the sins of the flesh, pulling up them skirt tails and looking at an ankle just makes you so amorous.
But that was only in European cultures, not in Indian and other cultures of the same period on the planet at the same time. And that was an effect of literacy.
Correct.
An eye bias culture. I know, but I'm sorry to bring that in on this point.
You did fine, but then what happened is now they can be running around butt naked and up to something, and you go, oh, well, that's just nakedity.
Arthur Croker calls this the boredom culture. We have arrived at a level of numbness that we're bored. We're overstimulated, but we then don't get stimulated, and that might make one feel bored.
We would say yes, but JW is all for the new Scotch tape bathing suits that are of the day. Those are not too offensive, but
Scotch tape?
Yes, it's where they use Band-Aids for bikinis.
So that's even less apparel.
Yeah, absolutely less than apparel. Less, yes.
That is up in the ante. That works for JW.
Well, after a while, though, what happens is when the Band-Aids are too big.
Oh, they get too big?
Well, no.
Oh, basically, in the future.
We're making references. They're running around with bathing suits on so little that the lines fit into the folds to the point that you can't tell that they are. I mean, the only way you know that you're not naked sunbathing is that you have confidence that you did indeed remember to put on your bathing suit, but you certainly couldn't tell by looking at the human genome structure presented before your very lying eyes that there's any coverage at all, you see.
Are you saying the Band-Aids are going to be too small?
Correct. They're getting smaller and smaller and smaller. That we made the reference that an actual swimwear would be the size of a Curad bandage is significant enough to point out that one is lewd and the other is covered. One's indecent exposure and the other end is covered.
Which one's indecent?
Well, when you just go naked.
You didn't have your Band-Aid on.
Officer, I'm not naked. I got on two Band-Aids and a shoestring.
Now, where are these Band-Aids happening? We haven't seen them in our lovely beach.
We're a family beach. They're on the nude beach.
You see the Band-Aids. Okay, Ion, we're wrapping up the show. Is there one more interesting question you'd like to address or pleading or wanting by someone?
Well, we sure got them stirred up with the new bikini decorum, but yes, even so. And don't worry, honey, if you look good in Band-Aids, you wear them and please your happy self. Be happy.
Okay, Ion, tell us about the last question, last probe. It can be a group one preference, or it can be an individual one.
This is a group one. What is all this hoo-ha about non-physical these days? You watch TV, and it's talking about spirituality. It's
right.
Talking about outside church realms. It's about hoodoo and voodoo.
And vampires.
Voodoo and vampires and lichens and
ETs.
Nephilim and
ETs.
Seraphims.
There's the ETs, new one called the ETs. It may not be considered non-physical, but could be.
Part of the extraterrestrial.
Yeah.
Oh, and then the new one is the 2012, where everything blows up. All this rip-roaring paranoia. No, paranormal. No. Paradoxical. What's your movie? Fantasia. What was your movie? That everybody was screaming about?
Yeah, Paranormality or something.
Paranormality. Well, we were closer with the
paint. Yeah, let me say this. So, McLuhan would say the discarnate world, the electrified world, the chip body, is obsolesced the astral body. Therefore, when something's obsolesced, you get a lot more of it being shown. Now, let's hear I undo the however. However, that's what McLuhan said, or maybe you can't go past McLuhan. But it's spirituality and the old images are obsolete.
We'll give it the old college try.
Okay. Go ahead. Here's the ball.
Right. The dynamic of this exposure, number one, it activates it. Number two, it numbs it. Number three, it sets the gauge of the standard by which the meme is judged. There's lots of dynamic. Used to, you had to have a fallout shelter. Remember they were going to bomb you during the Cold War? And you were less than if you didn't take resources and construct a bomb shelter, a fallout shelter, where I guess you go to fall out. And you had to pack it with sea rations and honey because it didn't expire, and food resources and canned, dehydrated stuff. Like, you're going to be in a fallout shelter without any water, so what's dehydrated food going to help you there? But we're not sure. However, that was the meme that was exposed thoroughly, that everybody had one. And then when they heard the sirens, you ran to the shelter so you didn't get blown away. Well, people don't have fallout shelters anymore. So what happened? Was that not real? Well, certainly it was real. Boy, you weren't a good American citizen if you didn't have a bomb shelter. They still have fallout shelters. They built them that way so you can have a place to hide, to live in the hole and for 1,000 years until the radiation subsided. So, you know, you had a chance there so you could see how it was going to go. Well, that fell away. Well, that got more press, even how to build them, what to put in them, and getting under your desk and drills to get ready for the drilling, I guess. But even so, that falls away.
I like the parallel. The Y2K and the survivalist movements 10 years ago, and maybe even 2012, is a retrieval of the fallout shelter. And McLuhan would like that.
Of course. Because everybody had one, and
yeah.
So that was normal.
So if now today, with all this spirituality blasted in your face, what's the parallel?
The same thing is true, that everybody's having to tap into their non-physical, because it's the meme of the day. Well, that's great, but it actually numbs the reality, because then you have an Edgar Cayce, very delightful spiritual Megatron, in spiritual worlds, and it was only because in his day that was a new, embraced meme by many. Now he's got his own library and just 14,000 readings, and all through this whole process, they're just amazingly laid out point after point after point after point, and it becomes very insightful. Well, what it incites is that now people are realizing that they all have these powers, abilities, spectacular, supernatural knowings, being places that are being activated, so much so that you're kind of off the scale if you don't have a fallout shelter, just as now you're off the scale if you're not psychically inclined or spiritually activated, or at the very least lined up on the grid.
So we have an interesting paradox, the catch-22. You have the non-physical being acknowledged everywhere, but people are bored, numbed to it. So we got to come up with a new way to activate it.
All right, here it is. When you start activating that power, when you start raising the dead with your hand, when you start moving the heavens and the earth, when you start speaking to the mountain to be ye moved and the mountain moves, when you start manifesting this power, this marvelous, powerful place that you have activated so much so till it becomes blasé, describe the universe, and by God, yeah, that's me. By God, try me and let's see how this plays out. When you start coming back into your knowing, when you start learning how to love, when you start having real compassion, when you start understanding who you are and where you are and how you navigate this place that is you, and take full culpable responsibility, it's not the mortgage company's fault. It's not the government's responsibility. It's not your mother's fault. It's not your daddy, granny, nanny, son, daughter, problem, issue, power company. It's not their fault. It's your responsibility. When you fully come into that place of power and knowing the stray emails that trickle in, they won't move your world. You'll smile and say, I know how you feel. And I felt the same way. However, since I'm enlightened now, I've found that I'm going to leave you and what you think of me out of my reality in tandem. And that you can run around sniffing up Occam's razor's rectum if you want to try to explain away all this magical, mystical, wonderful, inky, misty darkness that's eased in on your planet, that taking your very life force out of your life, and that eliminates all possibilities except the one you accept and achieve at this very moment. Oh, but don't worry, because it waxes and wanes and it changes, and sure as you get that history all wrote down, then they say, nope, never mind, sorry. Sorry, never mind. There was no Cold War. It was a warm war. It was a medium war. Well, no, no, that wasn't a war. That was a conflict. No, we changed your mind. It wasn't a conflict. It was a war. It was all about the paragarch. That's what it was about. So they could blow things up and get the Agent Orange out there and the napalm them. That's why it was a test to see if napalm was as effective as they thought it possibly could be. And it wasn't a dog safe in the country because it got burned up, but that's okay because it became Sunday lunch anyhow, so it was okay. So then you kind of come into this place where this becomes normal. And when the spirituality, the non-physical, becomes normal, that's when you're going to start seeing some activation and power on this planet that you've not heretofore seen. And then you start wanting to dance with parallel worlds and universes. Bless God, just whether you activate this one. You just wait until the asphalt starts curdling under your feet.
Yeah, when you activate this world.
This world. Then you go to other worlds, and you might better activate this
one. You raised the bar. Very good, I am. How did the audience respond to that? Did you get them jazzed?
You have the, what in the Christian faith they're known as prayer warriors. What that means is they go to the Holy of Holies, and they recognize God's sovereignty. They understand the power dynamic of their Messiah. They get that, and they also can bring it into their heart, and that can be a powerful place of comfort. It's also a powerful place of being. Jesus would have no problem giving the non-physical part of him that is, to activate the non-physical part of you that's you, to break you a warrior. Not an inciting a riot warrior, but one that can stand your own. You're not blown over by every little wind of change that comes puffing through, you know, that you won't get smoke caught under your skirt tail if you keep your skirt down. If you keep yourself grounded, you won't get blown over by any little drop of water. One drop of water falls. Oh, it's a flood. It's emergency warning. Call FEMA. Call GEMA. Call HEMA. Call any MEMA. Anything you want to call. Get the trucks rolling. It's over. It's coming. I felt it. It almost drowned me. It was a drop of water. Oh, we don't have flood insurance because the government said we weren't in a floodplain, so we can't even get the insurance. It has to be federally sponsored. Oh, get some politicians that allow us our coverage and give us the money to pay for it because we don't have any money. They controlled and took it all. But it's their job and responsibility. They're taking all the money, so they need to take care of it and provide it. Oh, and by the way, these car places are getting in a rough shape, so they ought to give us all a car. That helps the economy. We can't pay for them, and they ain't making any money anyway. The government owns them, and I own the government, and I'm responsible for the government. So by God, give me my new GMAC car for free. Oh, and the GMAC one I got, I'm a government participant. I get welfare. I get everything else that's provided by the government. And the government owns that company. So now this is the government. This is like a payday. This is that money check. Oh, we're going to get us a money check. Let's get us a money check from the government. Then we can take our money check and we can buy things that we can't afford that don't cost anything. But the government provides them because we have to work for the government to make the government work for us. Because we are the people for the people, by the people. We're the people of the people. So what's this all worried about? Oh, okay, this national debt's not a problem because we owe the money to ourselves. Okay, we got the solution. Here you go. Finally, first time ever. Here's the answer. It won't be an abomination, I promise you. This will be straight from non-physical. Here's what you do. You go to your checkbook. You have a checkbook.
Yeah, very few,
but people still do have some checkbooks. Write a check for the full amount of the federal deficit. Everybody write a check in the amount equal to total, find out, call your congressman and say, right this minute, midnight or tomorrow midnight, no, daylight savings time, okay, today, how much is the national debt today, exactly? Well, I have no idea. We'll find out. You get paid to be responsible for this. You're controlling it. You mean to tell me you don't know how much the national debt is and you're voting to decide how much it is and you don't know? Houston, well, that may be our problem, but let's get beyond that. They call the Treasury. Geithner comes out and he says, everybody that wants to know how much it is right now, oh, wait, now it's gone. It's a little more than that because we have interest on the interest. Okay, anyhow, by this time tomorrow, it will be approximately to the penny $10 trillion. So now you got your number. So here's the answer. Here's how you solve it. This will take care of every bit of it in one fell swoop. You have your checkbook where you put your money checks. You get these money checks and you deposit them in your account that you write your checks. If everybody in the planet wrote a check for this amount equal to individually the total national debt, they wrote a check and they made it to the United States government. Okay? Write it out to the United States government and make it out for $10 trillion and some change. Just round it up a little bit because that'll be a little interest on it. For $10 trillion. And sign it and get a deposit slip out of your bank book and take that check drawn on your account and send out your deposit slip and deposit that check into your own account.
You write it to the government, but you put it in your own account?
Yeah.
Well, that's not to you.
Yes, it is. You're the government.
So
you're on the fucking hook for it.
That's right. We're the government.
Who's on the hook for it?
Yeah, we are.
You are.
But we're paying ourselves.
No. You're not paying yourselves. You're paying yourselves off. Okay. And guess what that did?
That would solve the problem.
No, it would cause a chasm so deep in the chip body that's supposedly keeping up with this that every fiduciary in the country would literally have to close. Do you know why?
What's a fiduciary?
That check would have to, yes, the Federal Reserve. We were trying to be nice. Not.
Well, you mean like all these checks would flood in all over the place into various individual banks, and then they would look at them, and then they wouldn't know what to do with it.
No. They know what to do with them. It's a check. They have to process it. They have to give you a deposit slip. You've got a piece of paper.
Then you wait a week.
You made a deposit.
Yeah. Then you wait a week.
No. You don't. It won't. You've got instant credit. You've got the deposit slip. They call you up and they say, Mr. Dean, we've got a... No, I'm sorry. Mr. Neverett. No, I'm sorry. What was it? Mr. Marshall. Oh, no, wait. It's Peter Beater. Peter Beater. That's what. Mr. Peter Beater Beater. Well, we have a check that's been deposited in your account for $10 trillion. And we don't show that you have cleared funds to clear that. And Mr. Peter Beater says, oh, it's no problem. I've got a receipt. I'll bring that receipt right down, or I'll just give you the number right here, right now. Oh, yes, that'll be fine if you could do that. It's 123-7845-4242. That's my receipt number. And they pull it up on their computer, and their computer says, oh, my God, he's got a deposit slip. It's drawn on our bank for 10 trillion. $1 billion.
How do you get a deposit?
Okay.
Hold on. How do you get a deposit slip, Carolyn? When you go and put a check in, you write, you get a little deposit from them?
Mm-hmm. No, you have it in your checkbook.
What is that, Carolyn? I haven't done this in decades. So what do you do? You
know how you have to write in what you just...
And you give it to them?
No,
and they give you a receipt.
Well, you know, if you hand a check, they look at the check, Carolyn, and they're going to say, hey, this doesn't apply.
What do you mean it doesn't apply?
Well, wait a minute. No. This is a good idea, but it has to get past this little point here. Carolyn, you write out a check, and then you write, what do you do?
Yeah, the teller looks at it, thinks $10 million.
$10 trillion. No, he rejects it.
Right.
Why? They cannot reject it.
Why not?
Why not?
They can't reject it. It's drawn on their bank. If they won't accept that as tender, then guess what? The federal rules and regulations are very clear. They must then shut down.
Okay, hold it. Carolyn, walk me through when you go to the bank. You take a check out of your book, and you write a check to the government, U.S. government, $10 trillion to the government, right? And then you write a little deposit slip or something with it?
You write a deposit slip for $10 trillion.
As well as writing the check?
Yes. And on the back of that check, you put for deposit only. It's made out to the government. And you put on the back of that check for deposit only, and put your account number on it.
Well, I'm wondering why Carolyn does not believe that this could be done. Are you not visualizing what Ayanna is saying?
You're not the government, so how can you deposit into your account?
Who is if you're not the government?
Okay, we'll accept this. Well, if you tried it, you'd be stopped immediately. But if everybody did it...
Why would you be stopped? No, Bob. No, Bob,
they would not accept a piece of paper.
That's what it is. That's what's happening now. They didn't have $10 trillion to make a national debt either.
Okay,
they did it.
When we announce this tomorrow on the show, we'll run this great idea. We'll see what James thinks of it. We'll see how the public reacts to this. But very good, Ian. Very excellent idea. Carry on. So everybody that shut
then
down.
What happens is you get your money check and you deposit it in your money account. And then the bank has to clear it. Now they clear it within themselves, okay? They clear it within themselves. The national reserve would be increased to a number so large that everything would be taken care of. Now, guess what? You'd actually, to have that kind of deposit, you'd have taxes due. Wouldn't it if they say, well, you have taxes due on this, and say, okay, well, I just made the deposit, so take it out of that. And they go, you're serious? And we go, sure, we'll go ahead and file a return. You can just go ahead and debit it out right now. It's no problem. Here's the deposit. Here's the deposit slip. It's tender. It's good. It's good as your bank is good. It's as good as your bank is good. That's what you're saying. And then what happens is now all of a sudden there's so much abundance that it's amazing. It's beyond reproach.
Good.
It's fixed. It's done. And their own system within their system would be whole.
All right. Well, thank you. About time we got the answer. That's the answer. We will spread the word tomorrow.